It'll be a test of your yoga powers. Actually, his name is Mahayogi.
So, So the last 2 days, we've been speaking about the basic philosophy behind the reason for having good health and some of the basics, but we haven't gotten into, excuse the word, but we haven't gotten into the meat of the area of the subject matter. That's why I said, excuse me, if I'm using that word. Meat means the essence. Crust. We were just dealing with the crust, and now we're getting to the inside of the sandwich. Okay. So, we're going to be talking about different details, you know, things you can do. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the seminar, the suggestions that I'm coming up with have nothing to do with my speculation or my own personal desires, because before I joined the movement, I was not a macrobiotic person, nor a vegan, or any of those things. I was a vegetarian, a lacto-vegetarian, like I think most of you are vegetarians. Anybody hearing me? Today? Yesterday? No. I was a vegetarian. And when I joined the movement, I was very much into the standard Hare Krishna diet. And in fact, when I was preaching to people who were vegans, and they joined the movement, I told them they were demoniac. I was a very fanatic devotee. Let's say, I give the example, there's one nice girl, her name is Krishna Priya. I don't know if any of you met her, but you met her. No, she's from North Carolina, originally from Miami. And she was really into raw food, vegan, and she wouldn't drink milk, and I would yell at her and tell her she's demoniac. Not doing that. And then I would have all these nice quotes I would bring out, tell her she was going to hell. By trying to be a vegan. And sugar, you know, I'd take sugar and pour it on her food. Poor girl, you know, almost killed her. So, she's still alive today and she's laughing at me.
The reason she's laughing at me is she's saying, one of the favorite things we like to say to people is, I told you so. Isn't it? Then we'd like to say that, you know, I was right, you know, I remember, oh, I apologize, you know, please accept my humble obeisances at your lotus feet. So, what I'm basing this presentation on is not my personal biases. A personal bias means what I'd like to do. What I'd like to do right now is eat 2 or 3 pizzas and have a dessert with glugjamans and sweet rice and all that other nice stuff. And then in 2 or 3 hours from now, have a big piece of cheese for lunch. Okay. So I'm presenting something that by nature I wouldn't like to do. Of course, I like to do now. The reason I like to do now is because I took the purpose of my life from eating, drinking, and being married to serving Prabhupada. You know, because when I first joined the movement, I thought the whole purpose of human life was just to fill up the time between prasadams. Anyone have that experience? Yeah, that was the Hare Krishna philosophy. Because we had prasadam 3 times a day, and I just like would look at my watch. That's why I have a watch. So I figure out how long it is till next time I eat. So, I mean, a lot of us join the movement because we were attracted by the tasty prasadam. And prasadam is nice. It is directly Krishna. Like Lord Chaitanya said, it's like eating the saliva of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I mean, it's completely nectar. But you don't have to take a lot of the Mahaprasadam. If someone gives you a plate of Mahaprasadam, you can take a little. It's the same effect as eating the whole plate. Unless, of course, it happens to be the remnants of Prabhupada. When I was with Prabhupada, I would steal the whole plate and eat the whole plate, including the grape seeds and the rinds and the orange peels. And I would have eaten the plate too had it not been stainless steel or silver. You know, so in that case, if you find, you know, Prabhupada's remnants, then, and I would cheat the devotees and tell all the devotees there's nothing left and I would eat everything. So, but right now I don't have that opportunity. And also I'm a little older and not a little wiser, not too much wiser. But in any case, My purpose in life right now is to somehow or other please Prabhupada, and therefore the other purposes I had, like, you know, Tang Das, you know, just like I was looking at that list, Apana Das, you know, there, for the seminar, and I was thinking, where's the Tang Das there? So the other things that were so important to me before, you know, I used to keep a picture of my tongue on the altar along with the deities. That was a standard Sunday feast lecture I would give you. If you want to see who your master is, look in the mirror, and you'll see your master, the tongue. Yeah.
We gave him that name, Purshadamaya,
because he simply lived for everyone. For eating, yeah. Eating, sleeping. And, following Charvaka Muni said, beg, borrow, steal, get yourself some ghee. So all those things have sort of receded into the background, now that I'm thinking, you know, that I possibly could be a servant of Prabhupada, and therefore, you know, it's necessary to keep the machine running. So, these recommendations also are based upon scientific studies, not what some devotee came and told me, wow, I feel so good after I took a colonic. You know, I haven't... that happened too. You know what a colonic is? Yeah. So, you know, several times the devotees come and say, you gotta have a colonic, it feels so good. So I did it once. I'm not gonna describe the procedure, but it's pretty gruesome. And I did feel better. But 2 days later I was eating pizza again. So, just make more room. Or I had one friend who had open heart surgery. I'd never had any heart surgery. So he had open heart surgery, and I said, well, is it going to change your life at all? And he said, no, just every 15, 20 years, you'll just, you know, do the plumbing stuff on the heart, and I can keep eating and enjoying. Of course, unfortunately, 8 years after that, he passed away. So he didn't have time for the next open heart surgery. So I'm basing this not on what people told me or what I want. It's based upon extensive studies that have been done by a number of doctors, and a lot of research on my part, a lot of research on the part of other devotees, and every day I'm coming up with new information. And so the devotee who's helping me put together this PowerPoint is getting very frustrated, because every 2 days I'm sending like piles and piles more information to integrate into the PowerPoint, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Like that movie, what? Fat, sick, and nearly dead. So my PowerPoint is getting fat, not sick. But if it gets any bigger, it won't play on the computer. So these are recommendations, general recommendations in different categories. So let's go through them. Now the first one I talked about 2 days ago, and also yesterday, was called inactivity, which is called the breeding ground for disease. And I mentioned there was something called the sitting disease. Sitting disease means you sit for long periods of time and the blood doesn't flow properly, your muscles are not exercised, the lymph system, everybody knows what the lymph system is? You have lymph nodes, like under your arms, and when you get sick sometimes they swell, sometimes around the neck they swell. So the lymph system doesn't have a natural pump to it. The blood system has a natural pump. So it's going like this, like this, like this. But the lymph system requires you to move. And if you don't move, then disease can occur, because the lymph is not, you know, the lymph carries away some impurities and helps with the circulation of nutrients in the body too. So you have to keep continually move. As you see that I'm doing, I'm trying to demonstrate this in my giving of the seminar. Other than Bhagavatam class, I usually don't like to sit and just talk. First of all, it puts me to sleep. And second of all, it puts you all to sleep. So I don't want to put you all to sleep, because you may need more sleep, but that's another subject matter. So every hour or so, we should stand up, stretch. If anyone has seen my Laugh Yoga seminar, we have this stretch that we do. We stand on our tiptoes and breathe deeply and touch the ceiling, which is kind of hard, a high ceiling like this. So that should be done every hour if you're in a sedentary or sitting type of job. So it's very dangerous for the heart and circulation. What do I do in the airplanes? I do isometrics sometimes. Isometrics means, does anyone know what isometrics is? That means you put this down. You apply pressure against your different muscles. Like this. Pull. Isometrics. Or, I'm sitting down in the airplane and holding myself up like this. For about I can do it for about a minute or two. And exercising. And of course I do stand up sometimes in the airplane, although it's not always possible. I take an aisle seat. The only time I'll take a window seat is in a short flight, so I can put my head against it. But an aisle seat, because also another thing about an airplane is that you can get dehydrated on an airplane. Because the air has very little moisture in it. They actually dehydrate the air. Because the airplane is made of some metal, and the metal can actually corrode if there's too much moisture in the air. So you should drink regularly. That means if you're going to drink regularly, you have to go to some place to relieve yourself. And I time myself with the drinking so I don't have to relieve myself when everybody else is in there. Because in the airplanes nowadays, there's like one bathroom for 500 people. Not quite, but it can get a little hairy there. So I know that after people eat on the airplane, they're going to be in the bathroom. But while they're eating, nobody's in the bathroom. And while they're sleeping, nobody's in the bathroom. So I go to sleep while they eat. I have this whole timing thing. That's how I can travel. I sleep while they eat, and then they're all in the bathroom. By the time I wake up, they're all sleeping. And then I have free run of the plane. So I can walk, I can go to the bathroom, I can drink, and I bring my own water. I never eat airplane food. So here's some details. When you're sitting or lounging, your muscles are not working. It's called flatlined. And our bodies, as I mentioned before, the lymph system requires movement in order to work, and also the blood flow. Here's a study. 17,000 adults, that means people over 21, the more they sat, the more likely they were to die of heart disease within 12 years. Here's the statistics. Now, I'm not trying to find fault with TV. So this is not the point. TV is wonderful if you're watching Krishna Conscious TV. But they did it on basis of how many hours a day they watch TV. Because usually when you're watching TV, you're sitting, right? Right? No? Yeah. No, I sometimes watch Krishna Conscious TV on my treadmill. That's the only way I can do a treadmill, because treadmills are extremely boring. Isn't it? I mean, you go nowhere. It's like the material world. You work hard and by the end you lose everything. So a treadmill is exactly, isn't it? A treadmill is exactly the same as the material world. You work hard, you have nothing to show for it. So the only thing I could do is, I put on the Ramayana or Mahabharata and, tread my way through the Mahabharata, the Ramayana, the Dandaka Forest. I can't chant on a treadmill. How can you do that? Anyway.
I don't count it.
You don't count it. Okay. So, I have to keep my mind occupied, otherwise I go crazy. So, 1 hour of TV a day, that means 1 hour of sitting, doing nothing a day. Of course, usually when people are watching TV, what else do? They eat. That's a pastime. If you're watching a football game or anything like that, you wait until the commercials, and what do you do during the commercials? You run to the refrigerator. And you get a sandwich, run real fast before the commercial's over, and then you run back. So 1 hour of TV day, there was an 18% increase in heart-related diseases. 11% increase in overall deaths. 1 hour a day sitting. How many hours a day you're all sitting? And 4 hours a day of sitting, 80% increase. 80% means almost double, okay? And versus less than 2 hours. 80%, almost double the extra 2 hours. So TV time, as I mentioned before, also means sitting, not just in front of the TV. So in summary, the sedentary lifestyle, that means if you work a job where you're sitting down all the time, shortens your life expectancy. The body starts shutting down because it thinks you're dead. it thinks you're right getting ready. And you are, for all intents and purposes, brain dead when you're watching TV. I mean, do you use your brain when you're watching TV? When I was young, you know, in the Stone Ages, we didn't have so much TV. I mean, the TV that we had was like about this big. You remember that, Mars? And it was black and white. You had to get up and change the channels. We got a lot of exercise doing that. And we would do something that, I don't know if you've heard of this before, reading. Yeah, we would read. And you read. Yeah, it's something they used to do. People used to do in this world. So when you read, you use your brain. Isn't it? I mean, I've experienced even things about Krishna consciousness, just watching the screen. It's just very passive. You're not really using your imagination, your brain that much. It's just you become... That's why they call it, in English, the boob tube. Or idiot box. Boob means like an idiot. Or idiot box, because you become like... just staring at the thing. And you know, if you interrupt someone while they're watching TV, they get angry, right? Because they've retreated into their primitive brain. There's this... the brain stem... little biology for you, is like the primitive brain. Primitive brain tells you what? Fight or flight. So when you watch TV a lot, it's, you know, you're into this. If you ever watch someone watching a football game, you know, soccer game, they actually start to act it out afterwards. Get him, smash him. So it's this, it just turns off the higher brain of the human being. He had no brain. It's the worst possible thing. I mean, sometimes I watch devotional films like Ramayan or the Hanuman series, which I like very much, but I prefer to read. Okay, so sedentary is also associated, according to studies, with increased risk of diabetes, type 2 diabetes, which means adult onset diabetes. Type 1 is when you have it when you're young, started when you're young. Heart disease, stroke, cancers of the breast and colon, and depression. Interesting. Because here's the different reasons. We're using less blood sugar. That increases diabetes. No burning of fat. The enzymes that check for blood fats are inactive. And there's none of those happy things called endorphins. Endorphins are the happy thing that circulates. And you feel real good after exercise. So like this morning... we walked to the other side of the island. Only one devotee was brave enough to come with us. Where is he? Is he here right now? He left his body. Oh, there he is. Only one devotee was brave. Everybody else was scared. Anyway, you're all invited tomorrow morning. And you're late. You're late. He who hesitates is lost. So anybody who wants to come, I mean, we have some men, so if the ladies want to follow along, but we walk real quickly to the top and then go down a little bit. We don't have time to go all the way to the water on the other side because we want to be back for Guru Puja. So here's other things. Increased physical activity when you sit for less than 3 hours a day increases your sensitivity to insulin production, which means your blood sugar gets balanced. None of that... low blood sugar. When you have low blood sugar, what happens? Does anyone know what happens?
They get dizzy.
Dizzy and angry. Like I have one godbrother who's prone to low blood sugar, and he also has a lot of money. And also I like to borrow money from him. So when I want to borrow money, I ask him first, have you eaten yet? You know, I call him on the phone and they said, Maharaj, it's a sannyasi. You probably guess who I'm talking about. Anyway, have you taken prasadam yet?
No.
Let me call you back in about 2 hours. And then after 2 hours, you know, because the blood sugar, this is hypoglycemia, the blood sugar goes down and up. And then after 2 hours, I call him on the phone. And I said, can I? He said, sure, anything you want, Maharaj. You're my dear godbrother. So that's a trick. If you want to ask someone for something, wait until they eat. Don't do it before they eat. As they say, does anyone here speak Spanish? There's a saying in Spanish, barriga llena, corazón contenta. Right? You speak Spanish. That means the stomach is full, the heart is content, is happy. So, or the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, right? You feed someone up before, fatten them before the kill. So, what's that? Yeah, premarital training. Any girls who want to find nice husbands? This is it. Advice. There's a lot of sweets. And talk and propose to them right after they eat. So, the solution. Not before they eat. You gotta have some humor. I mean, this is actually part of being healthy. I'm demonstrating this to you. Because if you laugh, I mean, of course we have this whole seminar, which I'm not gonna give on laugh yoga. But if you laugh, so many diseases, your immune system can be enhanced, so many problems can be eradicated if you laugh about that particular problem. So regular exercising, you know, bicycle, I love bicycling, but yoga is good. And aerobic exercise, if you can do aerobic yoga, that's good. But for me, I like to move, go someplace. So I get on a bicycle and I go different places, not on a stationary bicycle. Walking is one of the best things you can do, but aerobic walking, like Prabhupada did, not just like this. Like this morning we did aerobic walking, isn't it? You were breathing hard. It was hard to chant when we were going up the hill, wasn't it? Something like that. You got to strain. No pain, no gain. In other words, if you're not straining, that means you're not really exercising. Yeah, there's a danger. If you have any tendency towards heart disease, do this under doctor's supervision. And also, don't do it in the middle of the day here. There's many people who die, seriously, who die from exercising when it's very hot out there. Or do it inside. Like, it's very, very dangerous. Be careful about the heat. One thing I wanted to mention is, we're coming up to Nirjala Ekadasi in 2 days. If you're going to be in any situation where you're sweating during the day, don't do a Nirjala. In other words, take water. Because if you sweat, you'll lose water from the body, the kidneys will be stressed. And I was actually speaking to Kadambakanana Maharaj about this, and he's aware of this dynamic too. You can really personally, permanently damage your kidneys. If you're sweating a lot and you don't take water. If you're going to sit inside in a cool place, go ahead, you can try it, but drink a lot of water beforehand. Yeah. The organs get dry. I mean, you can, there's instances where people who are trapped for like 24 hours without water, they had permanent kidney damage, some of them died. They were like earthquakes, they were trapped under a bridge or in a car or something like that and couldn't drink water. And they had permanent kidney damage and some of them left their bodies because of that. So please don't be, I don't want to say fanatic, but be careful. Be careful. Prabhupada himself never did a Nirjala in Ekadasi. Yeah. Only if you miss the Ekadasi, but you know, you can give up food for one day. That's fantastic. Nobody has died from giving up food, especially a Hare Krishna devotee. You have plenty of storage there. I'm not worried about anybody dying in one day. Yeah. So, what's that?
I just want you to agree to say something really important about aerobic exercise. And it's very important, the rhythm of breathing. And if you notice that the rhythm of breathing is changing and you're breathing shallow, that means that you need to slow down, because then it's very stressful for your heart and for everything. So just be aware and watch your rhythm of breathing, and then you can increase your activity according to that.
Good, good, good. Yeah, you notice that. If you notice you're getting faint, you know, the whole world starts spinning around you. I mean, I had that experience when I was climbing up to Hovelam. Anyone here has been to Hovelam? No, no one's been. That's where Lord Nrsingadev appeared from. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited that place. So I was going up this hill. Normally I can climb mountains, no problem. But it was the middle of the day, and it was about 10 degrees hotter than it is here. And I just the world started spinning around. I just sat down and I said, no more. And other people were walking past me, people who were older, just laughing at me. And they were saying, what's wrong with you? But everybody has a different body, too. Because by constitution, talking about Ayurveda, I'm Pitta. And I can heat up really quickly. So heat is not really good for me. So you may be Vata or something else. And you may be able to tolerate the heat a lot better. But I'm not able to tolerate the heat. So everybody should be aware of your body symptoms. Thank you for pointing that out. You know, if your breath is shallow, or you start to feel any pain here, or, you know, just like dizziness or something in the head, you can't remember your name. That happens. You know, when people over-exercise, they actually start to forget things. Then sit down, go into a shady place, and
somebody asked me my name, and I gave him a different name.
Yes, sometimes that happens. I mean, we get very tired or overstressed because the first organ that pretty much shuts down is the brain in order to keep everything else going. So be careful of your thought processes, that you could still concentrate on the holy name. So these are the things I mentioned before. You don't want to sit for a long time. Brisk walking, which means the way Prabhupada walked. We couldn't keep up with Prabhupada. I was a young man, and I had to run to keep up with Prabhupada. I mean, it was pretty amazing. And that was on a beach where it's hard to walk, a sand beach. Not like here, you got rock beaches. But in America, we got these sand beaches, and the foot sinks down in the sand. And it's very hard to run or walk on these beaches. Very difficult. And the Prabhupada was like that. Yeah, and then as Prabhupada was walking, he would all of a sudden stop to make a point, and practically everyone would run into him. Oh, you know, Prabhupada, just like fast, you know, and then he would almost crash into Prabhupada, because we crashed into each other, and then Prabhupada would make a point and then keep on walking. There's one funny story when Prabhupada was walking on the beach in Los Angeles. And Prabhupada was walking, and there was a big, big building, and devotees were saying whatever about the building. Prabhupada said, in the future, we'll have many big buildings in the Krishna consciousness movement like this. And then they kept walking, and there are very rich people who live in like Santa Monica, where Prabhupada walked, in Los Angeles and Venice. And there were like these Mercedes and Rolls Royces. That's a really fancy car. Prabhupada said, in the future, our movement will be so wealthy, we'll have many of these Rolls Royces. And then we kept walking, and there was one man walking his German Shepherd dog. And big dog. And Prabhupada said, in the future, our movement will have many dogs like this. And each time Prabhupada said something, everyone would go, jai, 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 Prabhupada. And so even when Prabhupada said, we will have many big dogs in the movement, everyone went, jai, Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, you're so foolish. Any damn thing I say, you say jai to. You have many big dogs. So, that's a morning walk story. There's many funny morning walk stories I can tell, but let's get on with this. So, these are all different suggestions for exercising. And reducing depression, you can sleep better. If that happens to be one of the things you like to do. Sleeping is actually very important. Prabhupada said, proper sleep is essential to think properly. Like if you experience not sleeping for a while, the brain just doesn't work properly. You know, you're sitting down trying to give Bhagavatam class and you don't remember Sarvadharmam Purichajam. You don't remember the Maha Mantra. Now, what's that mantra? Hare Jesus. Hare Jesus. Right? It can happen if you're overtired. I've seen some devotees giving class and they would fall asleep while they were giving class. Yeah. And then they wake up and say, where was I?
I saw one go out for a minute and he was starting a verse. He
yeah.
stopped right in the middle of the verse, fell asleep, and 1 minute later he picked up and finished the verse.
Well, that's expert. Yeah. You know, Gurudev's in trance, giving class. It's like that story Prabhupada said, told about the yogi who died, and all the disciples thought he was in trance. Remember the story? And then after a few days, the body began to, smell, so the disciples understood he was dead. So, you've all heard that story before. So, anyway, so these are some of the advantages of exercising. And let's talk a little bit about dis-ease. It's interesting, the word dis-ease is actually basically two words. Not to be at ease. In other words, there's some conflict going on. So, heart disease. That's not the heart. For some people, that's where their heart is, but that is not where the heart is. So, some statistics. Of course, this is done in America, so I'm taking American statistics, but I'm sure these apply in many other places.
You get the best statistics there.
Yeah. So every day, 2,600 Americans die of cardiovascular disease. That means every 34 seconds there's a death. 7.1 million have had a heart attack, and at least one heart attack. And you really, the only solution to this is to change what goes in the mouth and how you work. It's the number one killer. 83 million Americans, and that's, I guess there's about 300 million Americans right now. So that's a good percentage. And there's a doctor here, his name is Caldwell Esselstein. He said it's a food-borne illness, and we're never going to end the epidemic with stents, bypasses, drugs, because none of it's treating the causation or the cause of the illness. In fact, you'll find that there are studies that show that open-heart surgery, which is called CABG, that's the name that the doctors use for open-heart surgery. They call it CABG because it's arterial bypass surgery. So, you know, putting the bypasses in where they take the arteries from your leg. And if they have to replace the aorta, guess where they get it from? The aorta is the main one that goes into the heart. Now, not from the groin. They get it from a pig. That's where they get it from. The other arteries they can get from the groin. But the aorta usually from a pig. So you have part of a pig. Because you're eating like a pig, so I mean, what can you do? So you get a pig. Yeah, preparing for your next life, you're getting a pig aorta in your body. So there's studies that show that in spite of all these things, a person's life expectancy does not get increased. They may live for a while without heart disease, but then when they have these different transplants, they have to take immunosuppressant drugs. You know what that is? That means a drug that suppresses the immune system. Because when you get a part of a pig in you, your body doesn't really recognize it. It would actually tend to reject it. And so forth, you got to take all these drugs that keep your immune system down. And when you take drugs that keep your immune system down, guess what? When a little bug comes and attacks you, you have no defenses left. Anybody who gets a transplant would know that, even from another human being. That you have to keep taking these drugs for the rest of your life. And also when you get bypass surgery, you have to keep taking a blood thinner. Now the most popular blood thinner is called Coumadin. Anyone familiar with that? Coumadin. You know what that's usually used as? rat poison. You know, why is it used as a rat poison? Because you put it in the rat's food, they eat it, and they don't clot anymore, and they just bleed to death internally. It's the best way to get rid of rats. I'm not suggesting it. And actually, my father died from the after effects of open heart surgery because he refused to take the rat poison. And then he had a clot, and then he bled to death internally. But if you take, so it's damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you take the Coumadin, then you may bleed to death, or if you get a cut, you may not heal from that cut. And if you don't take it, you may get a clot. And you may die because of that stroke. So that's the effect of open heart. Although it's the most common operation nowadays, it's called bypass surgery, where they bypass the artery. So what happens is the artery has become clogged. And all has become clogged with pizza on the inside. You know, the fat. Fatty stuff and calcium. Calcium deposits which form on the fatty stuff. And so it becomes smaller and smaller and smaller. And if any of you studied science, you know when you try to pass a liquid through, or like water through a smaller opening at the same pressure, the pressure increases. And so you get high blood pressure first, and then after a while, closes up, and then you have death of a heart muscle. And the interesting thing about heart muscles, usually they don't rejuvenate. Or you may get a clot that travels. And I'm not talking about traveling to India. It travels around your body, and it goes to the brain. And when it goes to the brain, guess what? It chokes off the blood supply to a particular part of the brain. Or you may get some bleeding, hemorrhage in the brain. And that's, so many devotees have gotten that, yes.
Work hard, can also eat like a little bit.
Yeah, they can eat more.
They can somehow overcome these possibilities.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're always, energy is there.
That's a good point. If someone's working hard, they can eat more fat or other things in the diet, and they burn it out. You know, if you're farming, just like this morning on our walk, we passed by a couple who was farming in the early morning, and I said, this is a very healthy, very natural life, where the rest of us are just going to the grocery store, the supermarket to buy our food. That's our farming. We go to the shelves, and we pick out like this, and we put it all in right, we put it all in the cart. I'll tell you a funny story. I don't know if I told this story. I was in Fiji, and on some island in Fiji. In Fiji, everything grows naturally. It's really nice. Everything in the trees. So our plane got delayed, and it was time for breakfast. And I asked the devotees, "Where's breakfast?" And the devotees said, "All the supermarkets are closed. It's Sunday." And I said, "Look, what is that tree?" And they said, That's a banana tree. I said, what grows on the banana tree? And they said, bananas. I said, do you think you might want to pick some? So they go. So what grows on that tree? Mangoes. Okay. What grows on that tree? Papayas. Okay. What grows on nuts? And we had a whole feast for breakfast. But we're so lazy, especially in the Western world. And I'm not just talking about, you know, K-A-R-M-I-S, you know, people who are not devotees or whatever. But we have gotten addicted to a very easy lifestyle. In America, for example, to park at the supermarket, people will drive around for 15 minutes to find the closest parking space. You've probably seen this. And they won't walk like 30, 40 meters to the door of the supermarket. And then once they get in the supermarket, many people can't even walk, so they have all these riding carts in the supermarket. You seen that? In the Walmarts? You sit down, and you have the little basket in front of you, press the button, and you ride around. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's really nice. But people are too damn lazy. So, anyway, so this doctor recommended, we're not going along with all his recommendations. He said, no meat, no eggs, no dairy, no added fat. We say, little dairy. And he also said, we've beaten ourselves into a problem, and we can eat ourselves out of that problem. So, arteriosclerosis as I described before, means when the artery walls have this plaque. Plaque is like the pieces that I described before. And it starts to clog the arteries and blocks the flow of blood, less oxygen for the heart. Then you get this thing called angina. Angina means like these pains, these sharp pains from down there. And one thing that people take for angina is called nitroglycerin, which the thing is explosive anyway, but in little tiny capsules. And it's just the beginning of a heart problem. And then the heart muscle dies, and that's the connection between cholesterol and heart disease. Now, there's different types of cholesterol. Cholesterol comes from animal products and also from the liver, our own liver. This is the source of cholesterol. It's not all bad. There's good cholesterol and bad cholesterol. You see here, what's called LDL is bad cholesterol. And HDL is good cholesterol. And what you're really interested in is the ratio between the HDL and the LDL. Now, I'm not going to get into the details. And so this LDL can become more dangerous when it's oxidized. Now, you oxidize LDL cholesterol by cooking it with it. Frying, we're talking about. You know, if you're frying with anything like an animal product or something like that, that oxidizes it. So, I know we all like fried foods. I mean, the first time I ate a pakora, I almost thought I had died and went to heaven. And I remember the cauliflower pakora? You know, remember that? It was just, I remember the taste even now, how wonderful it is. It is. I mean, it's a wonderful taste, and when I go back to the spiritual world, I'm going to eat plenty of them. Yeah, it tastes like chicken. I mean, it has a, with ghee. Of course, nowadays the devotees like to cook with oil, but Prabhupada said, oil is for the outside and ghee is for the inside. So, you know, the taste is wonderful, but if you're eating too many fried things, particularly if the ghee gets dark, I mean, if it starts to smoke, then that means it's completely oxidized, and you get this LDL cholesterol, which is the most dangerous. And here are some food sources for LDL. The trans fats, which is in any commercial sweets that you're buying, not in devotee sweets, but any commercial sweets that you're buying, like donuts. You know what a donut is? Prabhupada said we have so many donuts, do-nots in our Krishna conscious movement. Do not eat meat, fish, and eggs. Do not take intoxication. Do not donuts. Have illicit sex. You know, Prabhupada said that. Donuts, do-nots. So that's what a trans fat is. They put it in things, and there's hydrogenated fat, where they hydrogenate the fat, and it's the most dangerous thing for you. Many types of margarine are hydrogenated. Worst thing for you. It's like this wax that we're talking about here. And it's also produced by the liver. So here we're talking about the ratios of total cholesterol to HDL should be 4-1. Average ratio is higher, 5-1. Vegetarians are 1.3 to 1. And I think in the next day or two, I'll show you my ratio, which is actually very good. It's about 1.1, which is very low. So it actually depends on what you eat. It's not just being a vegetarian. So fried, sautéed means like pan-fried, still with oil. Heavy fat content all lead to the similar risks. Like people say to me sometimes, this is not fried, because by frying they usually mean what, deep-fried? But actually if you pan-fry, I remember I used to cook. Now I still do cook. But I used to be the cook, main cook in the temple and cook for the deities. So one of my favorite preparations was pan frying eggplant. Or bagan, as you say in Hindi. And eggplant is like a sponge. Even though I didn't deep fry it, it would soak up so much ghee. It was delicious. Eggplant and ghee, isn't it? And it would soak up so much ghee, and I put tomato sauce on it, and it was just, wow. I can taste it right now. But even though it was sautéed or pan-fried, it still had as much ghee in it as deep-fried. And This is a quote. Our bodies make enough cholesterol for our specific needs. We do not need to add any to our diet. The liver produces cholesterol, yeah. Olive oil, what I wouldn't cook with any oil. What I would do with olive oil, what I do, is I get cold-pressed olive oil, because once you heat it, there's different types of olive oil. There's cold-pressed and also processed olive oil. Once you heat it, it has oxidation in it. Yeah, well, there's carcinogenic aspect to it. Also can increase your cholesterol. Olive oil never has cholesterol in it. Cholesterol only comes from animal products. It doesn't come from vegetable oil. But it can cause the increase in fat and cholesterol in your body once you heat it. Like a little bit of raw olive oil is good for your digestion. But I wouldn't cook with it. I mean, if you have to cook with any oil, and it also has a very low boiling point, olive oil. Actually, one of the best oils for cooking is avocado oil, if you have to cook with that. It has very high boiling point. I know a lot of people talk about canola oil. Anyone's heard about canola oil? You know why? Yes, rapeseed oil. The rapeseed is used as an insecticide. So what they've done is genetically modified the rapeseed, which actually is a very good insecticide, natural insecticide, and they produced it in Canada. So it is called Canola oil, or for short, canola oil. And it's not a natural oil. I mean, you can kill people. Not kill people, you can kill animals with it. Take a little spray bottle if you're in a dangerous situation. Like if you have to go to New York City or something like that, and then someone attacks you, you spray them with canola. No. It's not that bad. But one thing that I take, just a little humor. One of the things I take to prevent cancer and other diseases is something called horseradish. What do you call that in Croatian?
Heren.
And that is so heavy that you could spray it in people's eyes and it'll kill you too. But I take that every day as a cancer preventative and also disease preventative. If you take that, horseradish, you get sick very seldom. If you take too much, yeah, you'll have digestive problems. But careful when you cut it, you'll start crying. I mean, it's really astringent and or pungent or whatever you call it. Yeah, so it's a root. It's a root.
Yeah, black outside.
Well, that was a round. It's a round root. You can ask the devotees what it is. I really recommend it. That's one of the items in the Mediterranean diet that keeps people alive. Mediterranean diet, they take a little olive oil and a lot of tomatoes with the skin. Tomatoes have skin. We'll talk about that later. It's called lycopene, which is cancer preventative on the tomatoes. So every time you reduce your cholesterol level by 1%, you reduce your chance of heart disease by 2%. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Horseradish reduces cholesterol.
No, I just got talking about it. It has nothing to do with cholesterol. But it will actually prevent cancer. Good cancer preventative, antibiotic, and antiviral. Antiviral and antibiotic. And you take a little bit, you get used to it. It's when I was young, it was a standard in the diet that I was taking it. In many European countries, it's actually a standard in the diet. It's not at all uncommon. I'm sure you can buy it here, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes they sell them jars, like with mixture with a little vinegar and horseradish, and sometimes mustard and horseradish combination. It's called a relish. You put it on food, and it really gives a spicy taste to it. Okay, but that has nothing to do with heart disease. Okay. So we use vegetable oils minimally, olive safflower, and sunflower oil. And here's our friend again. Yeah.
Can I ask one clarification about the ghee?
Yeah.
No, because usually I know that about Ayurveda speaks actually the ghee, when you fry with ghee, when you cook with ghee, actually is is real crooked.
Right.
So, and also, I was also asked to ask you, how is it possible that actually you cook, for example, for the deity, you cook some food that actually is not healthy?
Well, the deity actually has a spiritual body. Krishna has a spiritual body. And we honor that prasadam. You don't have to eat like the whole plate. I would take a little of the deity prasadam and honor it. But too much of that for you is not going to be good, frying with ghee. Now, ghee is good. Like raw ghee can be, in Ayurveda, is like a carrier of medicine. It's one of the best things. When you make ghee at a low temperature, not a high temperature. When it's smoking, it's not good. But if you make ghee at a low temperature, and you may take it, it can help with different diseases. You can mix different herbs with the ghee. I mean, that's actually very good. Now, apart from the humanitarian or animal rights stuff, which I'm not going to speak about right now, that's another issue. But ghee is actually an Ayurvedic medicine. A lot of energy. And it heats you up. You know, heats you up. I remember when we used to go on... It was interesting. Prahlad Nanda Maharaj was talking about going on Sankirtan in Buffalo, New York, where it was very cold during the winter, during class this morning. It was like 20, 30 below zero. We had experience in Chicago, which is the same thing. And what we would do is we would each take a stick of butter and eat it like a banana. You ever do that, Maharaj? You know, just pee it. You know what a stick of butter is? A quarter pound. And we just eat it like a banana and to keep us warm. It was really effective. So if you're doing that or you happen to be an Eskimo, you know what an Eskimo is? Eskimo is a person who lives very far, far north. And what they do is they survive on eating whale or seal blubber, right? That's a lot of fat, animal fat. And that keeps them warm. I'm not saying you should eat seals or whales. But it may be necessary to drink ghee if you're preaching in the Arctic Circle. Yeah, it's a medicine. It's a medicine. But we're talking about frying, which is a different subject matter. So stroke, there's ischemic stroke, which is 85% of the stroke, because sometimes you hear this word stroke, but there's different varieties of strokes. Thrombotic is where the blood clot builds up in the brain usually, or in the heart, you have a heart stroke, and the blood stops. Another type is embolic, where the blood clot builds up and then boom, explodes. And that breaks off and travels to the smaller brain arteries. And you got, basically, the blood clot, and then you have a hemorrhagic, where the blood vessel in the brain, you know, ruptures, and blood goes all over. And that's the type that our dear God brother, Garbha Thakur has had. And it actually ruptured in the part of the brain where the doctors couldn't get to. Sometimes if it ruptures in the part of the brain where the doctors can get to, they are able to relieve the pressure by putting in something or operating. But they weren't able to do that in this case, and it was Krishna directly who saved him. Because in 99.9999% of the cases that people have that type of hemorrhage in the brain, that's it. Even I remember going in the hospital, I was there in the hospital with him, and the doctor said, you know, you better make some plans because he's not coming back. But because of his great determination and love of Prabhupada and Krishna, he was able to come back. Amazing. It was a miracle. The doctors couldn't believe what they saw. But we don't have that same determination. I mean, it happened to me, I'd say, I'm not coming back. I'm getting the hell out of here. Because I don't have that great a determination to serve, but he does. So anyway, so this is strokes are caused by the fatty deposits I mentioned before, and the brain cells die, and then you have the following symptoms. This is how you know you have a stroke. If you start to experience any of these symptoms, like trouble walking, that's not if you drink some liquor, obviously you're going to have trouble walking. You know what the police do when they stop someone? They say, walk a straight line. Like this. Too much blood sugar. Or you just had an argument or too much whatever. But, you know, other things being equal, if you have trouble walking, trouble speaking and understanding things, the world starts to spin, a numbness anywhere in the body, particularly it happens in the arms, the extremities, or in the face. Because strokes affect different parts of the brain. As you know, the right part of the brain controls the left part of the body. And the left part of the brain controls the right part of the body. So if you have a stroke on the left side of the brain, then you can have partial paralysis or numbness on the right side of the body. So any of that, or you, the eyes, you start to have some vision impairness, or even a headache, not an ordinary headache. And a headache which is suddenly severe and accompanied by some vomiting, dizziness, and other stuff like that. Of course, that sounds like a migraine. Some people have migraines regularly, but they're not strokes. So be aware. So what should you do if you start to have a stroke? Does anyone know? Take a needle. Well, first of all, you take some aspirin.
Oh, yeah, right.
Also, if you go in the plane, it's good to take an aspirin before.
Yeah.
It makes it look a little thin.
Yeah, that's recommended by some people, yeah. You need to take something to thin out your blood. And, of course, you need to go to a doctor as soon as possible. But immediately take some aspirins. Not too many, because you can destroy your stomach with aspirins. Aspirins are salicylic acid, and they can eat their way through your stomach. So take some aspirins, and that will thin out your blood until you get to a doctor. That's the first thing, because that's what the doctor will give you, a blood thinner immediately. And you can do that yourself before you get to the doctor. So be aware of that. If you see anyone doing that or having those symptoms, take care of them immediately. I mean, the best thing, as I said before, is to prevent stroke or these things from happening. What happened with the video? Ran out of space?
Yeah.
Oh, you're recording there. Okay, thank you.
Can you actually have a stroke and not know it?
Yeah. Yeah. It could be just very minimal. And you're not knowing, and you've lost part of your brain function or whatever without knowing. Sure. It happens all the time. You know, it's called a microstroke. So anyway, so this is something to be aware of. And if you have any of these things, then be aware that there's a possibility. High blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, you're overweight, you're not active, you're not acting, you're sitting down all day long. At night, you have obstructive sleep apnea. Obstructive sleep apnea is where usually something in your throat is keeping you from breathing properly at night. There's two types of sleep apnea. One is caused by the nervous system. Something is not wired properly. And the other is caused by, you know, something in your throat or you're too fat. It's very common for people overweight to have sleep apnea. Because the fat, you know, your mouth is too fat and things, anyway, the throat. And it obstructs your breathing. And you hear that at night. You know, even where I'm sleeping in the hotel, I can hear some people who are having sleep apnea elsewhere in the hotel. I have very good hearing, so I can just hear. And it's a really bad thing for marriage. You know, because the other person may want to kill you in the middle of the night because they can't sleep because of the noise. It's actually dangerous because you're not getting enough oxygen and then you can have a stroke. And another danger is, you know, if you're using pill therapy and taking hormones, like especially estrogen hormones, that's the ladies who get older. The interesting thing about estrogen, let me talk about that for a second, is that we're all getting a lot of estrogen unnaturally in our bodies. And that's coming from milk from cows that are pregnant. In the traditional Vedic system, the cow would give birth to a calf, right? And then the calf would drink, the initial milk would be given to the calf. I mean, that's actually very good for the calf's health. Then the cow would be milked. But the cow wouldn't be made pregnant right away. You get lit the cow, have a year or two of milking, whatever you do. Then you impregnate the cow. And you wouldn't milk when they're impregnated. But nowadays, they keep the cow pregnant all the time. Because the cow is a factory. The cow is not seen as a living entity. The cow is seen as a milk production or money production factory. They're not worried about the milk. They just want as much out of the cow, you know, putting the artificial devices on the cow's udder to squeeze out as much milk as possible. Cows won't give milk normally unless they really want to. Have you milked cows before, right, Maharaj? What? I've milked cows, and I know they won't give to you unless they're happy with you. But if you put a machine on, it sucks everything out anyway, even against their will. So here's the lactating cows, because the cows give you milk. And at the same time, they're pregnant, and guess what? You get all this estrogen, whether you're a man or a woman. So what that does for the ladies, that increases the incidence of breast cancer, cervical cancer, and other cancers, ovarian cancer. And what it does for the men is they start to develop female characteristics. And one of the things you'll see in modern society is that the little girls are going through puberty much earlier in life. I've noticed that. I mean, it's really obvious. Like at 8 or 9, they're going through this with the hormone changes. And it's difficult for them psychologically at 8 or 9. And with the boys, they're developing female characteristics. Yeah. Yeah, they're bigger, and they're female, and the boys are developing female characteristics, certain physical characteristics, or even the faces are not as masculine as they were before. I'm not gonna look. I'm not gonna look at any of them. So, forgive me, I started looking at everybody. So, but you'll notice this is occurring. Because milk is being produced unnaturally by the modern dairies. What to speak of the cruelty? You know, they're worse than concentration camps, what they're doing to the cows. I agree, 100%. Mara said he thinks we shouldn't drink milk unless it's from our own cows, and I agree 110%. I'm now offering to the deities, we can do, but as far as our own consumption, I mean, certain people have argued with me on that, and they said, well, we should buy as much milk as possible and drink as much to as benefit as many cows as possible. But the more milk you drink or buy, let's say buy from the store, the more cows will be mistreated. It's economics. Supply and demand, right? If you buy more, let's say iPads or iPods like you have there, then Apple computer will produce more. You buy less, they'll produce less. So it's the same thing with any product. So it's really a product of violence. Devotees should get into protecting cows in this way, because it's actually blood milk, practically speaking, when they're unprotected cows. So anyway, so this estrogen thing is a big thing, because most of us are getting too much estrogen. And that's what estrogen does. I mean, sometimes the ladies take it when they get older, they go through the change in life. But that actually increases the incidence of different types of cancer too. It's quite dangerous to be taking this estrogen.
And that's solely due to milking pregnant cows.
Yeah, primarily milking pregnant cows, yeah. And then the artificial estrogen they give is called Premarin, which comes from pregnant female horses. Like if the ladies are taking a supplement, estrogen supplement, it comes from horses. Anyway. So, well, let's say family history, that means anyone in your family had a stroke. If you're 55 years or older, that's me, of course, and Mara, just two of us in this, oh, you too. You too, you don't look it. You still got all your hair. 63. Wow. You gotta tell me your secrets. So anyway, or African Americans have higher risks. There's a reason for that. The reason African Americans or people who are darker skin have higher risks is they're not getting as much vitamin D, which is something we'll talk about. Hopefully we'll get to that in the next few days. Because people who have darker skin need more sunshine to get the same amount of vitamin D. Like I can get all the vitamin D I need in about 45 minutes a day of getting sunshine. I shouldn't take more than that. Take more than that, it could be harmful to the skin. So I get that in my morning during the morning walks. But someone who has darker skin, Indian, Afro-American, they may need 3 or 4 hours of full sun a day to get vitamin D. And the interesting thing is, where these statistics are from is in America, where many African Americans moved all the way to the northern part of America, like we're talking about New York or other places, and there's very little sun, like in northern Europe. Like if you go, for example, if you go to the Scandinavian countries, during the winter, there is no sun. During in some of the places, I've been there in the middle of the winter, the sun will just peep up at about 11 o'clock in the morning and then go down at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And people have all these diseases then. Of course, depression is one of the main ones. The suicide rate shoots up when they don't get enough sun. And so the Afro-American body or darker body is meant for more tropical climate. Whereas the European, you know, most Europeans are lighter, but still everyone's going out in the sun here and cooking themselves every day, you know, looking out my window, and everyone's just trying to get darker and darker. And that can cause skin cancer. You know, you just need an hour, maybe an hour of sun a day. But if you don't take that, you also get sick, and you can have these diseases. That's why since the incidence of people using sunblocker has been there, these diseases have increased. So don't use sunblocker unless you're getting more than 45 minutes. I mean, it depends on your complexion. Like if you're real light, like here's someone, yeah, like yourself, or here's a Scandinavian person right over there. He should be using sunblocker. Because he doesn't, the first time he saw the sun is when he left Finland. He said to me, you know, what's that? And he said, that's the sun. Huh? Well, that's what I read about in school. Yeah, but during the summer the sun's up all the time there, and you can wake up for Mangal Arati any time, day or night. The sun's out; it's like the middle of the day. Yeah. Well, it depends where you are. I mean, it's a complicated question.
Here, I stand in the sun at Joppa for about an hour and get the right sun.
Yeah. Here it's not a problem, but if you go to certain countries where the ozone layer has been depleted, and we're talking about specifically in the southern hemisphere like Australia, New Zealand, or countries like that, then you wear sunglasses first of all, because you can get different diseases of the eyes if you don't wear sunglasses. Cataracts it's called. But, you know, then you have to be really careful. Because there's a lot of UVB in the sun in those countries, and you can get skin cancer very, very quickly where there's no ozone layer. Here the sun is really not so bad. This is actually a great place to get sun. But all the way south, you know, be careful if you're going to Australia or New Zealand. Or if you're going north, like Alaska, during the summertime. So, how much more time? All right. So, gender, men are at higher risk than women. And most women have some sort of stroke later on in life. And they're more likely to die. So, I think we don't have any more time. Okay, we got 5 more minutes. So, the next big one is diabetes. Now, let's describe, there's two types of diabetes. Type 1 is adult. Type 1 is juvenile diabetes, where really your pancreas has been destroyed. They're both autoimmune diseases. Autoimmune disease means where the body or the immune system destroys some function in your body. Either it can destroy your nervous system, like in multiple sclerosis. Anyone seen anyone with multiple sclerosis? Or Parkinson's disease. Yeah, sometimes they can't walk, they can't think. It affects people differently. That's called an autoimmune disease, or there's diseases where it affects your thyroid. I was just talking to someone yesterday with Hashimoto's disease. Hashimoto's disease is where the immune system attacks the thyroid and destroys the thyroid. So you've got all these different types of autoimmune diseases. So type 2 diabetes is an autoimmune disease. Now, it's not simply by taking too much sugar. It's the body itself attacking the pancreas. So diabetes, where you get extremely high levels of glucose in the blood, and there's not enough insulin production, and too much sugar causes damage to the eyes, heart, blood, kidneys, etc., etc. Simple carbohydrates are foods like sugar, white rice, white potatoes without the skin, sometimes some of the dried fruit. Well, the dried fruit I take a little bit of, it's not so bad. You have to be careful with it though. And, when insulin production slows down, and the factors in this are weight, if you weigh too much, lack exercise, and you're taking saturated fats, it's interesting that saturated fats, more fats cause diabetes than the carbohydrates themselves. Normally we think that it's just carbohydrates. In other words, just sugars. But it's the saturated fats that cause the pancreas to be destroyed. And so, you know, the risk factors are the obesity, that means being too fat, hereditary, etc., high blood pressure, high fat levels, high fat and carbohydrate diet, sedentary lifestyle, that means you're sitting down all the time, or gestational diabetes, that means when a lady is pregnant, getting diabetes, and it increases after 45 and especially after 65 years of age. Now, there's ways where you can actually determine your susceptibility to diabetes type 2. There's the waist. What waist is this thing right here? Everybody knows what a waist is? So there's the waist ratio, waist to hip ratio. This is the hips right here. Yeah. Yeah, the hips are actually across the stomach, and the waist is here. A little higher. So your waist to hip ratio, and also your BMI, I mean there's other facts. BMI means body mass index. Later on, we're going to talk about that. And 80%, the bigger the waist, the higher risk of diabetes. Now this is in inches. I mean, someone can do the quick conversion for me. 80% of men who developed diabetes type 2 had a waist girth greater than 37 inches. What is that in centimeters? 80-something.
2.4, I think it is.
Yes, it's 2.5, yeah. So 2.5, so just like, that's 74. What?
36. It's more than
90. So if you're around your waist is more than 90, you have a higher risk. So you can measure your waist later. I'm not going to ask everybody what their waist is. It's quite embarrassing. Lack of sleep. Now that's an interesting thing. You know, we can push ourselves in Krishna consciousness and sleep very little. But this causes a malfunctioning of the immune system, which we mentioned before. These are autoimmune diseases, surprisingly enough, where the body attacks itself. So deep sleep prevents, or can help prevent diabetes. Not that you just sleep and you prevent diabetes. So here's a nice graph plotting the risk of developing diabetes against your waist, and that is how big your waist is. If your waist is quite small, 31 or less, then you have a 1% risk. And if it's 35, I mean, you can compute this to centimeters if you like, but I don't have time right now. 35 goes up a little bit, 37 goes up a little bit, 39 it doubles, but then it really shoots up at 41 or more. My waist used to be 39, and now it's 32. Yeah, so I'm actually... Are you going the other way? No, it's actually very important to keep the waist girth down. Well, with me, some of the pants don't fit the other one. You know? They fall off. So this is, let's just finish up with this. It's called the BMI. It's called the Body Mass Index. Is a number calculation. This is also in the metric system, so we can do this for everyone here. It's a screening tool to identify if you have a potential for any of these problems. It doesn't measure fat directly, but it's very accurate. It's very easy to use. You don't need a machine. And here it is. I don't know if you can see all these numbers, but maybe we can have some volunteers here who can tell me how high they are and how much they weigh. Anyone want to volunteer? Just a minute. Yeah. You weigh 175. And how tall are you?
I'm 170.
Well, you're 100. Wait a second. You don't. We're talking about kilograms here. Okay, you're 170.
And I have 75.
And you're how?
75 kilos.
75 kilos. Okay, you're in 25 right here. That means you're a little bit overweight. You don't look overweight. You must have given me the wrong figures.
175.
You're 175. That's better than 170. And 75. Yeah, you're a 24 BMI. 24 BMI is good. It's in a good range. You want to give me yours? Okay.
72
kg. Okay, you're 72 kg, right?
And 5.56 in height.
5.6, you're 25 BMI, which is in the overweight category, just on the, basically on the border. 25 is, you need to lose some.
Thank you.
And yeah.
187 centimeters.
That's pretty big. Wish I was that tall. I could play basketball if I was that tall.
97.
Let's get here. 97.
Yeah.
You're 27 BMI. You gotta take care of yourself.
Yeah, I know.
You gotta lose weight. Now,
how much then?
You're 27 BMI. You're right on the edge of being extremely obese. And I'm 5'11 when I stand up straight. And let's see, what, I'm 165 approximately. I'm 23 BMI, right in the middle of the healthy area. I used to be the same height, obviously. I didn't shrink that much. And then, let's see, 5'11", and I was, here I am, 27, about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, 27, danger area. So, that was, in other words, I was 200 pounds, and same height. So I went from 90 kg, all the way to 75 kg. And I feel a hell of a lot better. No knee problems. All the problems have gone away. Not just by losing weight, but by changing the diet and everything. I think we have to end now. Anybody else have any questions about this BMI thing? You can find this on the internet, the BMI chart. It's a very common chart. I mean, it's not the be-all and end-all or most important thing, but it gives you a rough indication of your chances of getting these lifestyle diseases. So we should shoot to keep our weight in the healthy area, not underweight. Not underweight. What's it? Let's do go cool. What?
172.
Your height is 172. Okay, and what are your, what is your weight?
About
60. You're pretty healthy. I thought you were going to be underweight, but anyway, you're pretty healthy.
I have only 4% fat.
4% fat?
Yeah.
That's why he's the Maha Yogi. And the rest of us are bogies. And rogies. Yeah, bogies and rogies. Yogis, bogies, rogies. Okay. No rogies. Okay, I think we have to end, so we'll continue tomorrow with our health suggestions and analysis of the health. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada had diabetes and
yes.
He slept very little.
Yes.
Does that have any connection?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so basically, Srila Prabhupada knew he was damaging his health, but